Now, the Lord God had planted a garden in the east, in Eden, and there he put the man he had formed. The Lord God made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye, good for food. In the middle of the garden were the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Genesis chapter 2, wait, Genesis 2, wait, Genesis part 2, I can never remember how this works. 2, 8, and 9. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and I'm a little confused as to the date of this week's book. But first, welcome back. I did not release an episode last week. If you're listening to this like a year or two later, it doesn't matter. But if you're listening to it in real time, my apologies for not releasing an episode last week. I was simply incapable of doing so. There were many reasons, partly just life piling up, partly mental health reasons, and as the kind of being the kind of person who believes that mental health is something to be talked about and not, you know, kept secret, I was having a little bit of mental health problems and simply could not scrape together an episode of The Bear Show for my listeners. At least not an episode of The Bear Show that I felt would have been releasable. Plus, I had another episode of another show to do. Plus, I had to help. There's just a lot of stuff going on. So I wanted you to know that everything is fine, and hopefully that won't be happening again, although I will be going on vacation at some point soon, so who knows? Maybe I can bank a few eps. I don't know. Things are always a little buck wild around here. But we're back, and this week we have a doozy. I am excited to talk about this book, not because it's something that I'm familiar with, but because it's something I am completely unqualified to discuss, actually. Something that, even beyond the usual biblical stuff that I am not an expert on, this is above and beyond my area of expertise. And so, because I am so, it's impossible for me to talk about this without any help, this week, I have brought on to the show a guest who knows a whole lot about the subject at hand. Please welcome on to... What? Oh, huh? Oh, okay. Sorry, everyone. I don't have a guest this week. Instead, I will be talking about this book all by myself. Yes, this week's book. And again, it's very confusing. I don't know who to believe. According to the database, according to the list I had, this is a 2012 book, but according to the publication page, it is a 2011 book. I don't know what's going on in the world. I feel lost and confused and scared and terrified. This week's book is 2011 or 12's The Berenstain Bears, All Things Bright and Beautiful. It is a Living Lights book. It is a Zonderkids book. And it is a book for us to discuss that doesn't have a whole lot of plot. Let's talk about The Berenstain Bears, All Things Bright and Beautiful. But before we do that, let's talk about a little person named Cecil Francis Alexander. Cecil Francis Alexander, who you might think is a guy, is not. I was confused and surprised when I clicked on Cecil Francis Alexander's name and saw a photo of a lovely woman looking pensive with her hair done up, full of flowers. Cecil Francis Alexander. But who was she? And what does she have to do with the Berenstain Bears? Well, she was a hymn writer, poet. She wrote a ton of hymns, like just a ton of hymns. I don't know hymns. That's one of the reasons I'm vastly underqualified to discuss any of this. I don't know. I know less about hymns than I know about most things related to religion. I know that hymns are songs that you sing in a church and they have numbers and the guy or the woman's like, open your hymn book. We're going to sing hymn 234, and everyone sings it, and everyone seems to know it. Like, you just know the hymns. And I know that the loudest people are usually the worst singers. That's pretty much what I know about hymns. I know there's a few that I know, like, on a hill far away stood an old rugged cross. That's a hymn, right? I know that there was one called How Great Thou Art, because I sang it at my grandmother's funeral. But I'm not really familiar with hymns, and I'm not actually that familiar with All Things Bright and Beautiful, which was written by Cecil Francis Alexander, and is her most famous hymn. She also wrote There Is a Green Hill Far Away, which I'm somewhat, I listened to it, I was like, oh, I think I know this one. And The Christmas Carol, Once in Royal David's City, which I don't know at all. That's just, it's one of those, I think, like, English Christmas carols that we don't sing in America. It's one of the rare ones, of the rare English carols that actually made their way over here. That's just not one of them. So, yes, Cecil Frances Alexander. She was born in 1818. She died in 1895 at the age of 77. She wrote a lot of hymns, and this is one of them. Now, what makes Cecil Frances Alexander interesting to me is that she's Anglo-Irish, that she identified strongly as Anglo-Irish. And I'm not going to get into the history of the Anglo-Irish. I'm not going to get into the history of the Irish and the English, the British. But I will say that from what I can summarize is that, you know, the Anglo-Irish identify strongly with being English, as they say, or British. They sometimes refer to themselves as English, but British. We're British. They had usually no desire for Irish independence. They were very happy to be under the crown. And they were mostly people with a lot of money. So, you know, good on them. If you're looking to, like, who is a are there any famous English, Anglo-Irish people that I could sort of like, so I could sort of get an idea of what they were like? Yes, Oscar Wilde, C.S. Lewis, maybe, Lafcadio Hearn, W.B. Yeats, Bram Stoker, so Sheridan Le Fanu. So you get the idea. And also, they were, I believe, mostly Protestant. Yes. So not, although there are some Catholics in that list, mostly they're Protestant. So there's a strong, like, Protestant identifying with the British line, and a lot of money going around. A lot of people who own land, landowners, property owners, and people who thought that there was not only God existed in the world, but that God had a pretty strong idea of how the world was made and how the world was supposed to stay. And that included a lot of upstairs, downstairs mentality. Let's just put it that way. The servants are there for a reason, and we'll touch on that. But Cecil Frances Alexander was writing a bunch of hymns, and she was like, hey, I got a pretty good hymn for you here. And it was called All Things Bright and Beautiful. It was first published in 1848 in her book Hymns for Little Children. And it's not a short one. It's got like about 1,000 verses. If, you know, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but it's not short. Let me see. I'm looking at, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, I guess it's like maybe 5 verses. It depends on there's like one that people always cut, and we'll talk about that one. But, you know, like, and then there's the chorus. Yeah, this is leaving out, like, the offensive one. So she had published this book. There's published this in the book, Hymns for Little Children, that basically just talks about God making everything. Everything that we love in the world was created by God. Isn't that great? No one really knows much about the composition of it because she didn't keep a lot of notes or write a lot of notes. There's theories or that she based, or was at least inspired by, Psalm 104, verses 24 and 25. O Lord, how manifold are thy works! In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. So is this great and wide sea, wherein are things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts. It may also have been inspired by a verse from the Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. He prayeth best who loveth best all things great and small. For the dear God who loveth us, he made and loveth all. Or William Paley's Natural Theology from 1802 argues, and I'm quoting here from the article that argues for God as the designer of the natural world. And in All Things Bright and Beautiful, there are references to wings and to eyes. And William Paley famously said, like, God has to have made everything that's alive, otherwise wings and eyes could not have developed through evolution or whatever they were referring to at the time. It's proof that God set things in motion. How can you evolve an eye? Simple. We know how you can evolve an eye. But at the time, you know, there's a lot of things that might have inspired All Things Bright and Beautiful. Now, there is a controversial verse, the third verse of All Things Bright and Beautiful, which usually gets skipped. In fact, I'm looking at the hymn on hymnary.org, and it leaves it out. It leaves out that verse entirely. The verse contains the lyrics, "The rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate, God made them high or lowly, and ordered their estate," which is okay. There's this belief that you were, like, God made you into a certain class or even caste, and you just don't leave that class or caste. And that was philosophically, that was formed a great, you know, part of British society at the time, a lot of European society at the time, which is that you can't rise above your station. It's literally impossible. The world has been divided into social strata by God. And if you are poor, then you are supposed to be poor. And there's nothing you can do to rise out of that. And if you're rich, you're supposed to be rich. Now, bear in mind, this was published in 1848. And what was going on in 1848 that had to do with Ireland? There was the Great Famine. So Irish people were dying by the handful. And this was like a way of saying, well, I guess that's how it's supposed to be. If you're poor and hungry, that's because the Lord made you that way. So that, you know, that, you know. Some people say that the line, "the rich man is a castle, the poor man at the gate, he made them higher lowly and order their estate," has to do with like, oh, we're all the same in God. But that is, I don't think that's right. So most people cut that verse from hymn book. Like, it's a tasteless verse. We don't know. I bring it up now because it's not going to come into play, because the Bears are not going to run into old Tom and be like, "The rich man in his castle, the poor man at his gate, Tom. God made you high and lowly." They're not going to walk by the Bear Country homeless shelter and yell at the people for rising above their station. That's not. So just know that. Like, that verse doesn't come into play. So yeah, so all things bright and beautiful. It's a famous hymn. It's about all things bright and beautiful. The bright things and the beautiful things. That's it. We'll talk about why you probably know some of the lines from this hymn if you've never actually listened to it later on. But that's it. That's a little background on All Things Bright and Beautiful. What happened to the author of All Things Bright and Beautiful? What happened to Cecil Frances Alexander? Did she go on to great fame and merriment? Well, she died and is buried next to her husband. And her home is now a grammar school. Oh no, wait! It closed in 2020. Never mind. That's it. There's also a stained glass window in her memory in Colum's Cathedral in Derry, Northern Ireland. So if you want to go visit that, go visit it, I guess, if you're in Derry. But back to the book. On to the book. The Berenstain Bears, All Things Bright and Beautiful. This is Mike and Jan joint. Zonder kids again. And the plot is really simple. Mrs. Ursula teaches Sunday school, and she teaches a great Sunday school class. There's a lot of arts and crafts. There's a lot of songs. There's a lot of plays they put on. There is the creepiest pantomime camel I've ever seen in my life. If you're playing a camel, a pantomime horse, pantomime cow, pantomime camel, you tend to think of, okay, one person's operating the face and the front legs of the camel. One person's operating the back legs of the camel. What I never thought, but I guess this makes sense, is that you could have each person's head coming out of a hump with eye holes cut in the humps, and the actual camel head just sort of being a dead-eyed doll thing. Maybe a puppet? I don't know. You see part of a nativity play, and the camel has eyes on its humps, and it's unsettling. It would be funny if it had eyes on its head, too, and the eyes are empty. The sockets of its actual eyes are empty, making it even more unsettling. So Mrs. Ursula, she has them, like, there's posters. You see posters they've made of Tower of Babel and David and Goliath. Pretty much the same posters we've seen in the classroom before in Sunday school. We also see them doing, okay, so they put on plays with costumes and sets and everything. And they play games to act out things they learn. Okay, Now, we see this picture of the nativity play. We see Joseph and Mary. We see a shepherd. We see the camel. We see a wise person. We see the angel. And then above that, we see a sign that says, learn to trust. And we see the bears doing trust exercises, doing trust falls into each other's arms. It doesn't say she has them, because it says they play games to act out things they learn. I guess they learn to trust. I don't know what that has to do with the Bible. But because trust exercises, particularly falling into each other's arms, is like inseparably tied to particularly high school theater, it seems like they put on plays with costumes and sets and everything is being illustrated by that as well. Like, not only did they do a nativity play, they had the full-on theatrical experience by doing trust falls that, spoiler alert, if you've never been in the theater, prove nothing. In fact, when I was in high school, we had to do trust falls, except we had to do trust falls off the stage. Like, people stood in two rows with their arms out on the floor. You had to get up on the stage and fall backward off the stage into people's arms. And I couldn't do it. Why? Because I didn't trust anyone. And turns out I was correct. So, you know, Foreseeing Phil would be my Garbage Pail Kid's name. So yeah, you see these cubs learning to trust. But one day, on this Sunday, Mrs. Ursula's like, we're not going to learn anything in class today. We're going to go take a hike. And we're going to go look at nature. And the cubs are like, what? And brother's like, a nature walk? What does this have to do with learning about God? And nature's like, nature has everything to do with what we're doing, kid. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. She's like, listen, just get in line. We're going outside. Okay, so they go outside, and you see these. This book is really an excuse for Jan and Mike to draw and show some just beautiful nature vistas. This is all like two-page spreads of, we have brother, Fred, Lizzie, sister, boy cub, and girl cub. I don't know who the other cubs are. But we see bunnies hopping around. We see turtle. We see, I don't know what that is, a chipmunk, I guess? Is that a chip? A woodchuck eating dandelions. We see squirrels and rabbits. We see this dandelion. It's a beautiful picture. They're all going out for a walk in the woods. And Mrs. Ursula's like, look at all these cute animals, kids. And then she starts to sing in a high, wavery voice. All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small. I don't know the melody, so I'm just, that's what I imagine she sounds like. And the cubs start singing too. All things wise and wonderful, the good Lord, the Lord God made them all. And sister's like, oh wait, is that what this is all about? Because God made everything in the whole world? And she's like, yes, yes, Sister Bear. Come on, let's go look at everything. So they go, and that's literally the book, by the way. That's the whole book, is they go for a walk and they sing this song. So there's birds. They look at all these beautiful birds. Again, this is just an excuse for the Berenstains to draw some killer looking animals. Okay, beautiful looking book, by the way. Very colorful. And you get some great, you see butterflies and birds. See a bird in the tree, see baby birds in their nests. Every little flower that opens, every little bird that sings. He made their glowing colors. He made their tiny wings. Thank you. Because they couldn't have evolved. I just want to bring that back up. Little wings, all these winged birds, glowing colors, tiny wings. All right, and they're singing, they're looking at birds and butterflies. Okay, then we get our first major overview vista of bear country. Okay, so they're standing on a hill, looking over the valley. We see down below us, and I love it when you get like a good, I love it when you get a good like overview of bear country, their portion of bear country. Bear town is nowhere in view. We see the bear family treehouse. We see the garage attached to it. We see Papa's tool shed out back. We see the cub's tree where they built that weird little clubhouse they never go into except when they're fighting over it. And we see it looks like a flower garden and a birdhouse. Their house is surrounded by a circular fence. The treehouse is not part of the circular fence. It's outside of it. You gotta jump over the fence to get to the treehouse, in case you were wondering. Right next door, again, right across the sunny dirt road, just right across the sunny dirt road, is Farmer Ben's fields. We see hay bales. We see a duck pond. We see his very small garden, presumably the one where brother and sister like helped him one summer. with the scarecrow in it. Beyond that, we see the barn, we see the silo, and we see his house, the farmhouse. So it's a little bit of a walk to get to Farmer Ben's house, but again, it's not much of a walk to get to Farmer Ben's. I bring this up solely because we've read some books recently in which it takes a whole trek across Beartown to get to the farm. That's not the case. You walk to the, it's right next door. You wake up in the morning, there's Farmer Ben. We see what I assume is Lizzie Bruin's house. We only see part of it, but we know that Lizzie Bruin lives within shouting distance of the Bear family's treehouse. But also we see a house that looks a lot like Lizzie Bruin's in the other direction. The other direction of the Sunny Dirt Road. I don't know whose house it is. Is it Widow McGriz's? I don't know whose it is. Who lives like about like twice as far away as the Bruins, but still within the in Bear Country? I don't know. And then way in the background, what it looks like we see the church. I don't think that. Well, I guess that's supposed to be the church, which means that they walked. They've already walked a good long distance because it's very far. We see the bridge, we see the river, and then off in the distance we see Big Bear River, and we see the Great Grizzly Mountain and the whole mountain range, and it's beautiful. Purple Mountain Majesties. I just want to stop for a second and enjoy this picture because it's beautiful. I love it whenever we get these overviews. It's always worth it. So yeah, purple-headed mountain, river running by. Hey, we got that. Thank you, bright and beautiful. Sunset in the morning that brightens up the sky, says brother, which means, yeah, the golden morning sun shone over the peaceful scene. So this is early. Like they got up what, at like 5 in the morning? They got to Sunday school at like 6. Now the sun's coming up because it's at least the summer. Like it has to be the spring. It's the spring. Okay. It's spring, so, you know, maybe it's 7 at this point, but the sun is just coming up. The sky is still purple and gold. Okay. They head down the hill, apparently. So that's another half mile in this trek. And they're walking past Farmer Ben's. They wave to Mrs. Ben, who's hoeing the rows of tomatoes, strawberries, and watermelons. Farmer Ben is out on his tractor cutting the hay to store in the barn for the winter. And Fred's like, hey, I know this part of the song. The cold wind in the winter, the pleasant summer sun. The ripe fruits in the garden, he made them every one. And we see a great shot of just like a sort of a memory, I thought it was Farmer Ben. I guess it's supposed to be Cousin Fred? He's wearing a Farmer Ben hat, which is weird. No, that has to be Farmer Ben collecting firewood. But is that I'm confused because we see the farmhouse in this picture. There's Farmer Ben on his tractor. There's their farmhouse. And then in the next shot, we see what looks like it could be Farmer Ben's house covered in snow, but it's looks different. It's a different hat. It's slightly different. It's different enough that I thought this was Cousin Fred wearing Farmer Ben's hat collecting firewood, but maybe it's Farmer Ben. I don't know. They both wear glasses, right? It's hard to tell. It's a distant shot. In any case, Mrs. Ursula's like, yeah, right on, Fred. So then they go to the nearby stream. There's some ducks. And here's where we're going to take another detour into probably the most controversial thing I'll ever say on this program. How to even get into this, because this is gonna ruffle some feathers. So they're down by the pond, there are ducks and there are geese, and Mrs. Ursula said, time for a little break, let's have a game of duck goose. Cubs sit in a circle on the grass to play. Duck, duck, goose, says sister. She taps brother on the head. They play the game. Why is this controversial? Why? Because I live, for those who don't know, in Minnesota, USA. In Minnesota, duck, duck, goose is referred to as duck, duck, gray duck. Instead of saying goose, you say gray duck. And instead of just going duck, 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 you say different colors. So you're, as you tap each person, you say like green duck, grape duck, red duck, yellow duck. Or you say words that begin with GR. Gross duck, grand duck. And then when you say gray duck, that's when you run. That's how I've heard it. So it's not exactly the same game as Duck, Duck, Goose because it has that extra element of trickery. Duck, duck, goose is more like being lulled into this, like you're sort of lulled into hearing this person say duck, 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 duck. So if they're doing it long enough, you're not expecting the goose. Whereas duck, duck, gray duck, you're hearing other words. It's a slightly different game. However, the reason it's controversial is because duck, duck, gray duck. So how to explain this? People in Minnesota are very proud of their regional differences. Things that people say in Minnesota, even if it's not only in Minnesota, people in Minnesota think is really cool, or like a sign of regional pride or something, in ways that I have not experienced in other parts of the world. Like, people that can be proud of where they live, but like, if you mention duck, duck, goose or duck, duck, gray duck to a person in Minnesota, they will bring up the controversy as if they're the first person to ever, as if it's the funniest thing in the world. Like a middle-aged guy telling a mother-in-law joke at a party and laughing at his own joke. And you're like, okay, that's like, all right, calm down, dude. That's what it's like here. People think the duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, gray duck thing is like the most amazing rivalry or something, controversy or something in the world. And there are shirts of it and games of it and local memes of it and jokes of it. And if you, and people are like, haha, great, great. But in other parts of the country, absolutely nobody cares. Like, nobody cares. I guess it's like Minnesotans think it makes them some kind of underdog, this like preschool game that has no bearing on anything. Yeah, it's like, well, we're the weird minority in America for this. Like, we do this. Like, we interpret the game this way. And we're like, who cares? It's a game for 4-year-olds. Like, it doesn't matter. But you bring it up and you're like, duck, duck, goose, the person will be like, gray duck. Like, oh, that's funny. Like, it's not funny. Like, we know. Like, I know. Like, if I was telling a story from my childhood in Texas and I was like, oh, there's this one time we were playing duck, duck, goose, like, someone would be like, gray duck. And I'd be like, no, I'm talking about an actual story from my child. Like, I'm just trying to tell you the story. You don't have to interrupt. They'd be like, gray duck, oh, did you know that in Minnesota we say yes? And I'd say yes. Yes, I know that in Minnesota you say gray duck. Like, do you see, it's like making my blood pressure go up just thinking about navigating that conversation. Gray duck. Yeah, it's funny. It's always funny. In any case, if a Minnesotan read this book, they'd like return it to the grocery store wherever they picked it up. I don't know. I just had to make that slight detour into gray duck territory. In any case, they play the game. Mrs. Ursula's like, now what's the next part of the song? Fred's like, ah. Tall trees in the greenwood, the meadows where we play, the rushes by the water we gather every day. And she's like, great, all right, let's go back to school. So they all go back to the chapel, and then Sunday school is over. And Mama Bear and Papa Bear come to pick them up. They get Honey Bear from the kids' daycare. And I assume Mama and Papa were at church? I don't know. Like, it just seems like they went off and ran errands. And Mama's like, what'd you do in Sunday school today? And they're like, we went on a nature walk. We learned about all God's creatures, great and small. And I want to point out that Mama has her vest on here, her purple vest, but it seems to have a clasp on it now that I haven't noticed before. So when did the clasp appear? Questions. It's got a little like circle that seems to be holding the two sides together. In any case, he gave us eyes to see them and lips that we might tell how great is God Almighty, who has made all things well. Last shot is Mama, Papa, sister, brother, pushing Honey in a weird stroller. Going up the sunny dirt road towards their house, we see some deer in the background, butterflies, birds, bees, rabbits, sun is in the sky, mountains in the background, forest in the trees. All is good in the world, all things bright and beautiful. And that's the book, All Things Bright and Beautiful. It's literally just the hymn, All Things Bright and Beautiful, with the Cubs acting it out. Basically just like, you like this song, right? Well, how about a book about it? And let's cut out that one verse about keeping the poor people in their place. All right? All right. But let's talk about it. There's some activities and questions from brother and sister. Let's talk about it. What new activity has Mrs. Ursula planned for her Sunday school class? And why did she plan this special activity? Well, it was the nature walk. And she wanted the cubs to see everything that God made, presumably. That's an easy question. That's not even like a discussion question. That's just like, what is it and why? And she tells us. There's a correct answer to that, too. Name some of the gifts from God the cubs see as they go on their nature walk. Well, assuming you consider all these things to be gifts from God, everything, all the things, birds and bees, everything they see, according to this song, all things bright and beautiful. Talk about your favorite creatures God has created. Bears. I don't know. I can't think of any animals all of a sudden that I like. The shrew. How can you help care for God's creation? Aha. And here we get to the heart of the matter. So people were talking about the Berenstain Bears online last week or the week before. I every once in a while I do a general search for the Berenstain Bears just to see if any conversations have popped up on Twitter, on Reddit, places like that. Like, it gets brought up periodically, like usually in the context of like, anyone remember these books? They're weird and religious now. But someone brought up the fact that, as usual, they're like, there's, you know, they got all weird and religious once the sun took over, which is how it's usually sold to people, even though these books were literally written by Mike and Jan. But that's, you know, that's the way that I usually, if it hasn't been too long, I'll usually jump in and gently chide people for their misconceptions, because that's where my life is now. But whenever I hear that, I'm like, well, not only are they not like weird and religious, they're just religious. They're also like, they also include these things. How can you, like, we are not only appreciators of this planet, we are stewards of this planet. Like, if we are going to enjoy, whether or not you believe in God or not, if you're going to enjoy nature, it's your responsibility to help take care of it. So how do you help take care of it? How can you help take care of it? Well, I am going to look, I'm taking a look at the butterflies on this. Monarch butterflies were just recently put on the endangered species list. Monarch butterflies frequent our backyard. Why? Because we have natural prairie grasses growing in our backyard, one of which is Joe Pye weed. And even though Joe Pye weed isn't listed as like the favorite thing the monarchs like, it is a thing that monarchs like. And so, like, during certain parts of their life cycle. So we get a lot of monarchs because we have giant stalks of Joe Pye in our backyard. And that is one way you can help care for the earth that you make people might not think about. Even if you don't want to do it for your whole yard, designate a section of your yard to grow natural grasses, natural plants that would normally be growing in that area that might benefit bees and butterflies, even wasps who are pollinators. But also, remember, wasps kill insects you don't like. Take care of the things that you see around you. You don't have to kill everything. You don't have to kill everything. You don't have to cut all the grass down to the dirt. Every single thing that grows doesn't have to be eradicated. You're not a YouTube lawn care person. I get recommended a lot of YouTube lawn care because I like watching boring things on YouTube. And they're like, for this neighbor's yard was overgrown. And so I offered them a free lawn makeover. And it's literally just like killed everything that lived in that yard, cut everything down to the dirt, destroyed all the trees and plants and shrubs, started over from scratch, salted the earth so nothing may grow there. That's YouTube lawn care in a nutshell. Get out and do it. Using art supplies as well as items from nature like leaves, grass, twigs, but don't pull them. Just pick them up if you find them. Create a scene showing some of God's creation. Share it with the family. Not with your family. The family. I'm not going to do that, but it's a good idea. Go create a scene using nature. Create nature using nature. I'm skipping the middleman and just leaving it alone. 2, gather a group of family members and friends and join together to clean up a local playground, park, or neighborhood to show God just how much you appreciate and respect his creation and creatures. If you're cleaning up a playground or a neighborhood, you're not really showing how much you respect nature and creatures. You're just cleaning things up. Like, the neighborhood doesn't naturally occur. The neighborhood's not part of nature. The neighborhood is actually intruding on nature, but I get what they're saying. I get it. Organize a cleanup like a YouTube lawn care person. I think part of this is just be a good neighbor, be a good steward, be a good intelligent being, and take care of the things around you. I think that's like the whole point of this book. Take care of things around you. So that was 2011, 2012's The Berenstain Bears, : All Things Bright and Beautiful, Zonder Kids, Living Lights, Jan and Mike. The opening quote, by the way, was from Genesis, which is weird because I guess that's kind of about this, but it doesn't really make the knowledge of the tree of knowledge of good and evil doesn't come into play in this. And if you're going to bring up Genesis, you got to have some of that in there. Like if two brother cubs had like slain one another, that would have been something. All Things Bright and Beautiful. I like it. I like this one. If you're into the religious series, this is a good one. It's beautifully, lavishly illustrated. Everything's very colorful. And again, some great nature vistas by Jan and Mike, or Jan or Mike, not sure. One of the two. But I said that I was going to mention a couple of things after this. Why you might be familiar with All Things Bright and Beautiful. And that's because of its cultural legacy. You probably are familiar with the books or the TV series, All Creatures Great and Small, All Things Bright and Beautiful, All Things Wise and Wonderful, and The Lord God Made Them All, which is just the first verse of All Things Bright and Beautiful by James Herriot, which was adapted into the TV show All Creatures Great and Small. It's a bunch of veterinary stories by James Herriot. You may know them from the Monty Python song, All Things Dull and Ugly, from Monty Python's Contractual Obligation album, which is a parody of this hymn. All Things Dull and Ugly, All Creatures Short and Squat, All Things Rude and Nasty, The Lord God Made the Lot. I mean, it's funny. It's just funny stuff. It's just Monty Python. Otherwise, I don't know how you would know. Like, I don't know why you would know this, if not for that. Unless you went to church. I guess maybe you went to church. And you were like, Phil, I know this because like it was a part of me. It was a part of growing up. So maybe that's it. I don't know. But that's All Things Bright and Beautiful. What's your experience with All Things Bright and Beautiful? If you want to tell me about it, find me on Twitter at Berenstain Bearcast or on Facebook at Deep in Bear Country, Berenstain Bearcast. Let me know. What did you think of All Things Bright and Beautiful? What's your favorite hymn? Do you have a favorite hymn? Do you not like hymns? Is there a reason you just can't stand hymns? I don't know. What's your deal? What's your story? Tell me about it. Also, you can find me on Twitter at P. Corey Gonzalez. That's my personal Twitter, where I just rant and rave all day long. But I hope you're taking care of yourself. I hope you're keeping yourself well. I hope that if you haven't been well, that you're able to take care of yourself in other ways. I hope that life is treating you fine. I hope you're getting enough sleep. I hope you're staying cool if it's hot outside and warm if it's cold outside. That's all I care about, that you have food to eat, a roof over your head, And tell someone you love them. Tell someone you love them today. It doesn't matter if it's a family member or a friend, a bartender or a bishop. Someone, tell them you love them, if you love them. If you don't love them, don't tell them that. But if you do, give them a shout out. That's to me, that's how you can make the world a better place. Otherwise, I will see you all next week. Otherwise, I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting me. And I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.